Into the Weird podcast crossover special, Marvel's Acts of Vengeance.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is my co-host, Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Billy. I'm fine, man. Not feeling very vengeful today. And the reason why we're mentioning that, listeners, is, you know, we're supposed to be quite, you know, enamored with vengeance on this episode because we're covering a crossover from the late 80s, right, Billy? Early 90s from Marvel. So this is a bit of a bonus episode for the listeners, something they might not have expected. But yeah, we're doing the comic book crossover equivalent of podcasting here with the Acts of Vengeance crossover for, and this is a great name, picked by the guys, I think, at the Roll Spine Podcasts, the Merry Marvel Marching Society for the month of March. So yeah, this is the Into the Weird crossover segment where we're doing Doctor Strange featured in Acts of Vengeance, that storyline. So Billy, this is our first ever podcast crossover. I mean, we did a mini crossover with Ryan once for Halloween, you know, for his, Midnight the Podcasting Hour, but that, you know, could that really be counted as a crossover? I think not.
So, yeah, I mean, this one, Acts of Vengeance, is bizarre because, as you and I were talking beforehand here, I have the omnibus, but it doesn't include the Doctor Strange issues.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I never bought that omnibus myself, but even during the time, you know, when I was collecting Doctor Strange at this time in 1989, but it was my Doctor Strange fandom on its last legs because I had already become so disillusioned with Doctor Strange during the, Strange Tales, you know, that was done before the Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme series. So by the time I got to issue 11, 12, and 13 of Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme, which we're going to be talking about now, I was already not really reading them as ardently as I should have, or as ardently as I wanted to, because I was not feeling the art. I was not feeling Roy and, you know, his wife co-writing with him. I'm not saying that's her fault. I just wasn't feeling the storylines. The writing was fine, but Roy was trying to be a very modern with his dialogue at this point in time, and it didn't always work. So, you know, there was lots of bad patches in the series that I just couldn't forgive, and that's why I eventually dropped off. I think issue 23 of Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme was my last issue that I bought, and then I never went back to the series again. I haven't even read all of those issues that I own of the 23 issues, and you know, but I did read these though when they came out, but I was not impressed at all. So, but still, we're gonna cover it and we're gonna give them their due, right, Billy? Because after all, we're doing this crossover, so there definitely would be listeners out there possibly interested in this event, maybe just historically speaking, right?
Right. Yeah, Strange Tales 2, it killed it for me. that was just like, oh no, that I just was like, oh, and I mean, we'll get into it on our regular episodes as well, even the regular series, you know, yeah. from 1974. By the time that got to its end, was not anything to get excited about either. So
that's right. Now we should mention, listeners, that this is we're firmly Bronze Age comic book fans, but that doesn't mean we're not fans of the ages that followed. You know, the Dark Age mm-hmm. of comics. You know, all of that. The Copper Age. We are fans of many titles from those comics, but you know, during Into the Weird, Billy, we focus primarily on Doctor Strange and assorted Marvel titles from the Bronze Age only. So that's, let's say, 1985 and all the way back to 1970, you know. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's probably why we're not as enthused as we should be as Doctor Strange fans talking about Acts of Vengeance. But, you know, there's a couple of good moments in these comics, so we're definitely going to enjoy talking about them. And we're also going to, you know, critique the series a little bit and explain to you more in detail why this just didn't do it for us. But Billy, to give a little bit of a history of this crossover, I mean, there had been crossovers before this time. I mean, this is around 1989, right? So I think at this point in time, the Mutant Massacre has already happened as a type of X-Men crossover that also crossed over with other Marvel titles. And Inferno, you had Inferno. Atlantis Attacks, right? Was Evolutionary War also that type of crossover at this time.
And yeah, that was around...
Yeah, maybe a little bit earlier than this one, right? But, you know, the thing, the problem that I had with this series is it encompassed so many titles, and there wasn't a main miniseries, like, let's say, for instance, a Secret Wars or something. Not that Secret Wars was, you know, intended to be that, but, you know, there wasn't this main series that tied it together, you know, that you could use to kind of get the gist of what's going on. So I wasn't collecting Avengers at the time. I was collecting Thor, so I knew a little bit what was happening over there, but I wasn't collecting Avengers. So I was, you know, a little bit surprised, like when in the first issue that we're going to be talking about here, Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme 11, when the Hobgoblin showed up to kill Doctor Strange, I was like, what the hell? You know, what's this guy doing? He's hitting above his weight class a little, isn't he? But then it turned out he's also now really a demon. You know, he was transformed by Nastir, the enemy from Inferno, into an actual Hobgoblin. So that made it a little bit more credible. But still, Doctor Strange wiped the floor with him, right? So, but, you know, that underscores the entire premise of this Acts of Vengeance crossover, which is... they wanted to pair up heroes with villains that don't normally meet in the field. Right, Billy? So, right. For instance, you had like Daredevil fighting Ultron. You know, you had Spider-Man fighting a Sentinel. You, who else? You know, I've forgotten now, but you know, still,
We'll be back after a quick break.
It's time to take a ride down the audiobook trail.
I am John McClane. Welcome to the podcast. I ended up discovering the world of audiobooks and thinking, you know what? I've found my spot. We'll do bloopers because I have thousands of them. I love a good story. And, you know, I have to admit, as far as vocations go, this one's pretty cool.
This is the Audiobook Trail Podcast.
We're going to drop a 30-minute episode every 2 weeks. Audiobooktrail.com.
Out of this entire omnibus, there's only one comic that I really love, and it's the Captain America issue where you get to see Magneto kick the crap out of the Red Skull.
Yeah, understandably so, because how could they work together ever, conceivably? How could Magneto, you know, because of their past, you know, okay. Yeah, I mean, come on, Red Skull, Nazi, you know, responsible for you know, countless murders of Jewish people and others, and Magneto's whole origin based around the fact that he came from the death camps and survived them, and that's why he hates, you know, humans. But the Red Skull hates mutants for the same reason, the fact that they're not of the same race. So yeah, you know, I love the fact that, yeah, I mean, I love the Red Skull as a villain because he's so irredeemable, so terrible, so totally evil. You know, so he's one of those villains that I really can get into because you know he's a villain. There's no redemption for him. But Magneto, you know, actually, if you think about it, Billy, Magneto's a great villain because he's treading this line between, you know, good and evil all the time, you know. But sometimes I don't see Magneto as a great villain because he's not really a villain. He's kind of like Namor, you know, Prince Namor the Submariner. He's not really a villain. You know, he's mm-hmm. only a villain when the story needs him to be a villain. You know, that's why I like pure villains more sometimes, you know, because you know what you're going to get with them. But okay, the surprise factor of villains like Magneto is also good. So, you know, but we're going off on a tangent here. Sorry, I apologize for that. But, you know, I love that too about the whole storyline. And I was reading Captain America at the time. So, you know, that's pretty mm-hmm. great. And that's probably the reason why everything fell apart. Because for the listeners not in the know, Acts of Vengeance was instigated by a stranger who, in fact, later on, spoilers, you know, spoilers for people who have not listened. So, skip ahead a couple of seconds, but the stranger was Loki. Once again, Loki, who had initially caused the Avengers to come together as well, not just in the Marvel MCU, but in the actual comics way back in the 60s, right, Billy? Loki was their first official threat and brought the Avengers together. So now this Axe of Vengeance, he's thinking, okay, he's going to do to the Avengers what they did to him way back when, and he's going to assemble all the villains and ask them to, you know, mix it up with heroes they don't normally fight and kill them, you know, for all the defeats they've suffered in the past. This is their vengeance. So initially, an interesting premise. I wouldn't say it's a great premise, but, you know, if I had been reading Avengers at the time, I would have been excited for possible matchups in my mind. What do you think, Billy? As a kid.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're a little kid reading this, I'm sure you thought it was the greatest thing ever. And on paper, or, you know, someone a little more mature, it sounds pretty awesome, or at least, like, a good idea. But, yeah, execution-wise, it's tough. It's just, like I said, it's just way too encompassing, way too all over the place, you know? It's just, you can't... There was not a way to get all these writers and artists on the same page to have a really good flowing story throughout all of them. It's just I don't think it's possible, but even if it is possible, they didn't make it happen.
So that's right. That's right.
It's not great.
Basically, what you had to do is, let's say, for instance, they allotted three comics, like they did with the Doctor Strange series, to you as a writer doing Acts of Vengeance, like Roy and his wife Dan did. It's three issues of normal superhero shenanigans because it's just a superhero fighting a villain. You know, so they just had to throw villains in there, mix it up with Doctor Strange that wouldn't normally fight Doctor Strange. Although, you know, we'll talk about something, you know, some villains that appear that are well suited to Doctor Strange, in fact, and they have fought him before. But in the comics, it seems like Roy must have forgotten that they fought, that Doctor Strange has, in fact, encountered some of these villains before. You know, but we'll get into that with issue 12, right, Billy? Now issue 13 is also a one where, you know, he fought a villain he's never fought before, but issue 12, there's definitely like a mistake made there, unless Roy wanted, you know, to use, we'll get into that. Sorry, listeners, I'm getting ahead of myself here, right, Billy? But, you know, I'm just quickly going to run through some of the titles that this was featured in. I think the main title would probably be The Avengers, right, Billy? And then Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man around this time. And Captain America and Thor. Iron Man 2, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll put Iron Man in there. And maybe West Coast Avengers.
Coast Avengers, yeah.
Yeah, they were probably the main titles. But you had other titles in there. You had The New Mutants. You had Punisher, Alpha Flight, Fantastic Four, I think. You know. Yeah, basically all of their titles. Yeah. Uncanny X-Men.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, Web of Spider-Man. Yeah, I don't know. There's, even Silver Surfer had an issue, I think. You know, Cloak and Dagger, let's not forget them. Hulk, you know. Mm-hmm. So, did I mention Moon Knight already? I think I did. Anyway, so, Billy, now I'm quickly going to run through the list of podcasts that our listeners could find, you know, if they wanted to listen to the other podcasters doing this crossover with us for the Merry Marvel Marching Society covering Acts of Vengeance. Okay, Ryan Daly did it on FW Presents, where he discussed Avengers, right? And you've already listened to that. I've yet to listen to that. And then other podcasts featuring this would be Al Sedano's Warlock and Thanos podcast, Resurrections. And I think Third Degree Burn. What a great name for a podcast. They're doing Acts of Vengeance, Back to the Bins, Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, Roll Spine Podcasts, of course. And those are just the ones I've listened to so far, you know. But like I said, I've yet to listen to FW Presents with Ryan. You've already done that homework on that side, and by all accounts, that's a good show. So, you know, there's some gems to be had, out there, especially if you just want to listen to some really good podcasts and guys pulling this, you know, crossover apart, which I think it kind of deserves. I mean, I would almost rank DC's Millennium above this. but still, you know, that's just my opinion. So we're going to have fun discussing these three issues. Now, Billy, this is normally we go in depth into an issue of Doctor Strange, but here we're going to quickly be covering three issues of Doctor Strange. So we're not going to go as in-depth as we usually do, because this is just a bonus episode. It's going to be no more than an hour. So I'm going to start, Billy, and we start with Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme, number 11. So I'm quickly going to give some specs on that title. It was cover dated December 1989, but on sale September 26th, 1989. Cover price $1.50, and the editor was Ralph Macchio, and it was a whopping 32 pages. And the cover art was done by Jackson Geiss, and the interior art as well. And then Roy and Dan Thomas were the writers, Janice Chang lettering, Tom Vincent doing the colors, Mike Rockwitz assistant editor. And then, of course, at this point in time, Tom DeFalco was the editor-in-chief of Marvel, right, Billy? So an interesting era, just not my favorite era of Marvel. Actually, everything post-Bronze Age, post-1985, you know, I've got a little bit of a, you know, problem with as a whole, because it seemed like before 1985, everything I was reading was gold, right, Billy? It's like every title was good, but then it started to change a little bit for me. Still, there was a lot of good stuff published by Marvel, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s. It just, you know, lots of misses as well. Lots of hits, but lots of misses too. All right, Billy, so I'm going to quickly give the synopsis here. Oh, by the way, if the listeners want to find this, I think you can find it on the Marvel app. I'm not sure which collection other than the Acts of Vengeance Omnibus does not include the Doctor Strange issues, right, Billy? You mentioned that. Ugh. So if you really want, you can pick up the Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme Omnibus Volume 1. That will have these issues in. But I don't own that. I just own the originals. And I don't think I'm ever going to pick up a collection with this. But, you know, Grant is a big, you know, our co-host Grant, who started Into the Weird with us, he's a big fan of the Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme era. And, you know, there were some good stories in here. So, Billy, I'm quickly going to give a recap of where we stand at present with Doctor Strange here. Now, Doctor Strange has got a supporting cast that's huge compared to his Bronze Age supporting cast at this point in time.
Right.
And some of these folks have appeared in the original Doctor Strange Volume 2 from the Bronze Age. You know, we've got folks like Morgana Blessing. You know, we've got Rintra, the Minotaur, the green Minotaur guy, the other dimensional apprentice of Doctor Strange from Reval. We'll get to him during our normal Doctor Strange course, right, Billy, when we... I mean, I think originally Doctor Strange met him because the doc needed to repair his cloak of levitation, which had been torn in a fight. So we're going to learn all about that once you and I get to that. And then you've also got Wong at the time with his fiancée, Aimee, and she's staying with them at the you know, Sanctum Sanctorum. So, and then you've also got Sarah Wolf. Let's not forget her, right, Billy? She's also hanging around at the time. She has a thing for Wong, but, you know, it's an unrequited love because of Wong's arranged marriage with Aimee, right? So you've got this interesting dynamic. But for me, it seems that the Doc is constantly surrounded by these hot women. Now, not that that's a problem, right, Billy? But damn, it's like, it's weird. Right? They're all hanging out at the Sanctum Sanctorum. And, you know, Clea also is still a force in the Doc's lives, even though now they've sort of unofficially split up because she's the queen of the dark dimension and she's constantly fighting the mindless ones. But Yet she also makes an appearance in these three issues, which we'll see. So they've still got this sort of long-distance relationship. Very, very long distance that they're maintaining, the Doc and Clea. So I don't think I've left anyone out, right, Billy? Other than the first villain that the Doc encounters in issue number 11, which is the Spidey villain, the Hobgoblin. Like I earlier mentioned earlier, he has since become a real magical villain, gifted with magics by, you know, Nastir, the demon from the X-Men Inferno storyline. So, but, you know, as things stand at the moment, Billy, Doctor Strange, he was presumed dead, you know, and during that time, Morgana Blessing wrote a biography of Doctor Strange. And then, you know, now the Doc is alive again, and, you know, everybody's wondering if this biography is true. Is he really a Sorcerer Supreme? The Doc wants to debunk all of Morgana's Blessing's claims in the biography. So, you know, he's approached by a talk show, right, Billy? Which is, you know, who wants to set the matter straight. But they've also invited Morgana Blessing, which the Doc didn't know about. It's a bit of a out of left field there for him, because he was thinking that he's going to set the record straight on air to the entire nation that he's just a surgeon who lost the use of his hands because of a car accident. He's not, in fact, the Sorcerer Supreme as this biography outed him as. And because of this biography, his relationship with Morgana Blessing has also been kind of like affected, right, Billy? They're feeling some antipathy towards each other. I'd say you can, they're almost, you know, hate mailing each other, or, you know, they're not on the best of terms because of this biography.
No.
So they both appear on this talk show at the same time, you know, sitting, you know, next to each other. And the hosts of the talk show, immediately they see that, oh, this is not going to work, right? Because there's, but basically it's just no comment from Steven and Morgana, both of them, right? So, and I think it's also J. Jonah Jameson's publishing company that's going to publish this biography, because it's almost assuredly going to be a bestseller, right, Billy? So this is where everything takes place. It takes place in this talk show studio room, where they're filming the talk show, and the Hobgoblin bursts through the skylight, forcing Steven, who is, of course, the Sorcerer Supreme, to enact some spells that will blanket and cloud the minds of, you know, everyone in the studio and all the viewers watching this live all across the country, all across the world. But he's the Sorcerer Supreme. Hey, that's a walk in the park for him, right, Billy? So I'd say, I mean, he proceeds to mop the floor with the Hobgoblin, both magically and physically, right, Billy? Or what would you say? Talk about this battle. Like, what do you think about this fight? This weird fight in the studio between Steven and the Hobgoblin.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, it's weird. And I mean, I didn't see at first where the Doc said about, you know, because basically there's a loophole here. It's like, you know, oh no, he's trying to prove he's not the Sorcerer Supreme, but then he did this in front of a TV cameras and like a live studio audience and all that. And the whole time they're fighting, you're kind of thinking about that. But then when the fight comes to an end, the Doc says that he put everybody to sleep.
Yeah, he conveniently used a spell.
Yeah. It's like, oh boy.
Yeah, what was that? The Mist of Morpheus? They never say. I don't know what he was using. But yeah, that only happens after the fact, like you said, Billy. So it's a bit of a surprise. But of course, you know, the Doc with his vast magical repertoire, he's always got a deus ex machina, an ace in the hole, you know, with his magic. He could do that. So it must make it easier for Roy and Dan Thomas to write this. So, Billy, let's get into a bit of the nitty-gritty. I did not enjoy this issue much. My main complaint is the art, and also the fact that there's this whole storyline with the Doc's brother, Victor Strange, which is actually an interesting storyline, because you and I both, Billy, we're big fans of Marvel's vampires. Now, the Montesi formula, which was a storyline that happened at the end of the Bronze Age there for Marvel, culminated with the Doc wiping out vampires all across the Marvel universe by, you know, enacting that formula as a spell. And, right. You know, that strangely seemed to, vampirism still seemed to exist, because the Montesi formula can be negated by something we would later learn to be the vampiric versus. But, you know, that's a story for another day. All that is known at the moment is the Doc, you know, had this horrible incident in his past where he did not show up for his father's funeral 2 years after his mother died. He refused to show up for his dad's funeral, even though he had a great relationship with his dad, and he just didn't want to deal with the grief. And then his brother Vic came over to berate him for that, right, Billy? And he found him in bed with like a hot model or something. Okay, that is, I mean, we always make fun of Steven being a dick, but wow, this is taking dickishness to another level here, right? This is not him being a dick to the Hulk or Namor or, you know, anybody in the Defenders. This is him being a really terrible, reprehensible person, and I don't like that, even though I do, you know, like all the other horrible shenanigans that the Doc has done during his lifetime. This is one of the lesser ones. That's one of the main reasons I don't like this comic much, is because of the Doc, that reveal of his past where he just wiped his behind with his family members, basically. It's a horrible way to say it, but it's true, right, Billy? So
yeah, he does recount his origin a little bit, and it's just like, because he gets called out for having a brother no one knew about. And it's like, yeah, well, when you try to retroactively do crap like that, it never really comes across that great in the long run. You know, it's like, oh, okay, so all these people that know you so well, especially Wong, none of them knew you had a brother. It's like, oh, boy.
Yeah, and, you know, again, we have, I mean, Wong's written much better than he was in the Bronze Age. He's got more agency. But, again, we've got Wong falling into this role later on, and even this Minotaur apprentice of the Doc Rintra, where they just say, oh, it's forgivable, we understand, Steven. Even Sarah Wolf is like, correct, that. She's like, oh, we understand, that's in the past, let's forget about it. No, let's not forget about it. You know, that's, how could you forget about that? So, Billy, it gets worse, because right after his brother confronted him at his apartment way back when in the past, they had a fight, and the brother ran out into the rain, and he was hit by a car, and he was killed. And so Steven feels guilty for his brother's death. So he ends up, he ends up appropriating his brother's body and cryogenically freezing it in a warehouse for 2 decades almost, right? What? In the hope that one day medical science will allow him to resurrect his brother. Jeez. Okay,
Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah. Oh, man, this is crazy. But, you know, it's comics. We love craziness. We love kookiness. But this is, what kind of person is the Doc to do that? I mean, his sister didn't, the Doc's got a sister, right? Didn't she insist on a burial or an open casket or something? You know, I don't know. But, okay, so a lot of family tragedy. The Doc might not have been in his right mind, right, Billy? I'm not even sure if his sister is, she never died, did she, Billy? She's alive.
Not 100% sure.
Because they never really dealt with his family in the Bronze Age, you know what I mean? They never dealt with his mom and dad. Suddenly now in the late, you know, 80s, he's got a mom and dad with names, you know, much like, you know, Jonathan and Martha Kent for Superman. The Doc's got parents with who are now, you know, characters in his mythology. Now, that's great, because it's sort of expanding the universe a little bit. It's just, I don't know how much of this is still canon and how much of this has been retconned. You know, I'm not even sure. We got to get someone like Peter from the Sanctum Sanctorum blog to weigh in on that. Still, you know, this is not, this doesn't help us with the Axe of Vengeance part, which is basically just the Hobgoblin biting off more than he can chew, right, Billy? And then As an aside, we learn that Steven's brother Victor has been, you know, cryogenically frozen, and he's since become a vampire. He has contracted right. vampirism, and that's because of a spell that was used to resurrect him. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is going to cause some problems, even though later on he's going to technically become the new Baron Blood. Do you remember that, Billy? I mean, the old classic villain, Baron Blood, the Captain America villain from World War I mm-hmm. and World War II, you know, he was actually a British guy, you know, but he fought on the side of the Nazis, right? He... I think Cap decapitated him, or he was decapitated and he died during the Bronze Age, right? So, you know, he's gone. He's kaput. He appeared briefly as one of the Grandmasters, Legion of the Unliving, once in an Avengers annual, right? Where he was brought back from the dead. And then Cap ended up killing him again by impaling him on an icicle. Oh, man, that's brilliant. But, you know, then with the Doc's brother... You know, they made him now a good guy. Baron Blood is now a good guy. So, I mean, there's no reason to call him Baron Blood. You know, it's revealed that the Doc is from Nebraska, for heaven's sake. Right, Billy? It's what, is there a barony? I mean, Baron Mordo is the only one, and he's not even, you know, related by blood to Doctor Strange. He's the only Baron I know of that is an actual Baron. But Baron Blood, his brother, why call Vic Baron Blood? You know, it's weird, but it was funny. It just so that's my two cents on the issue. It ends with the Doc beating up the Hobgoblin and him sort of, you know, making up with Morgana Blessing. They become friends again at the end, because after all, he saved her life, and so that's how the issue ends, Billy, with just a knockdown, drag out fight through this studio with Steven blanketing the minds of all the viewers. And us learning about the sordid moment from his past. And then, you know, with Morgana and Steven again becoming best buddies at the end. So, Billy, final thoughts on this issue. What are your final thoughts?
Not a big fan of it. Other than I did like, you know, like I said, how Wong was treated a little bit better in this issue. You know, had some more dialogue than he does in, you know, like typically a Bronze Age comic. And then... You know, I like his fiancée, too. I like that character quite a bit. So, you know, I like that he had a relationship there. And, you know, then even Sarah Wolf poking around, too. I like her character a little bit, too. But other than that, oof, yeah, not awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of like Roy took many, you know, ancillary characters from the Doc's past and just threw them all together. Or it might have been also from his wife's side. I don't know, because he probably forced her to read all the Doctor Strange comics from the past two decades before they started writing it together, right? So, you know, it's just the cast is a little bit big. Some of them don't need to be there, but Wong is always an essential. And now he's got more of an advisor kind of type role. You know, he's in an advisory role. So that's how I like Wong to be. You know, I don't like him to be this manservant mm-hmm. that always answers the door. I like him to add his knowledge and his insight and his intelligence to the discussion of how to deal with this magical crisis at any point in time. And that happens. And I'm kind of a fan of Rintra. I don't know how you feel about that dude, but he's got a few funny moments. He's kind of like a jokey kind of character, right? But he's in there for comedic effect. What do you think about Rintra?
I initially liked that, but it gets old really quick.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it doesn't take long for that to wear thin. The more you read of him, later on it becomes old. But right at this point in time, I'm still lukewarm on him. He's got some good moments, I would say. Yeah. But like you say, it's just weird. Doctor Strange for Doctor Strange, it's not weird having a Minotaur as an apprentice. But, you know, having this guy constantly... walking around, and he's a bit of a bumbling kind of character, right, Billy? I mean, we'll see in the next issue what happens, but he's got some moments where Roy, you know, attempts to use some humor, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So Billy, now it's your turn, dude. Do you want to give us the specs, or do you want me to go ahead and tell the listeners all about issue 12?
Well, it's the same creative team as 11, except for I think the colorist is different.
Yeah,
other than that, it's everything the same.
Yeah, Tom Vincent's doing the colors as opposed to... Oh, no, sorry. Tom Vincent did the colors in 11 and Gregory Wright. Yeah, he did the colors in 12.
Yeah, so otherwise, same thing. Same team for all three of these issues, like I said, except I think the colorist alternates but between 11, 12, and 13. But otherwise, yeah, Roy and Dan Thomas and Butch Geist and Janice Chang. So, all right, well, I'll do a little quick synopsis here, and then we can get right into it. So, after last issue's events, Doctor Strange speaks with Rintra and Sarah about his relationship with Morgana Blessing. He then notices an open door at the clinic and finds a woman waiting inside. She introduces herself as Amora and begs for his help, claiming that Nightmare is going to kill her in her dreams. She then kisses Steven, and Rintra walks in, and he sees it's the Enchantress in disguise. Steven agrees to meet her later, and Rintra tries to warn him, but Steven ignores him. Later that night, on a rooftop, Steven meets her, and it appears that he's under her spell. We soon see, though, that it's Rintra in disguise, and Steven then battles Amora and her executioner. At one point, it looks as though Steven is in trouble, but none other than Clea shows up to save the day. All right, what did you think of this one, buddy?
Okay, yeah, this one, I mean, had some of one of my favorite Defenders villains. Well, I see her as a Defenders villain. Actually, she's a Thor villain, right, Billy? But she showed up a couple of times in the Defenders. She is Amora the Enchantress from Asgard, just known as the Enchantress, her supervillain name. And she's usually accompanied by the Executioner, Scourge, also an Asgardian, wielding this giant double-bladed axe. He's since died, and now Amora has used a human with her magic to sort of impart a human with, you know, the powers of the Executioner. And speaking of that, Billy, the Executioner also showed up in that Legion of the Unliving army from the Grand Master that I mentioned earlier, along with the original Baron Blood. And Thor took him out there with one punch. But, you know, so the Executioner and the Enchantress, I kind of like them. I own two of their action figures, which I once bought. I just like the look of the Enchantress and the Executioner as a team, you know. I don't like him wearing this giant man in the Iron Mask kind of helmet. I like him, you know, having his bald head with this Baron Mordo kind of beard that he's rocking sometime, you know, this Ditko Baron Mordo beard. Yeah, so, and, you know, for his supervillain logo on his chest, he's got an axe, which is a little bit on the nose. We get it, dude. You wield an axe. You love axes. So, but, you know, I thought this issue a little bit silly, but, you know, this one's more... This one is more plausible, right? You send the Enchantress after Doctor Strange because she's more on his level. Yeah. But, you know, all of Axe's Vengeance is about superheroes fighting supervillains that's not on their level and vice versa. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. The Hobgoblin thought he had a chance in the previous issue because of his paltry magics. Okay, I can get aboard with that. You know, supervillains aren't the most, you know, rational of thinkers, right, Billy? But with Amora here, it makes more sense. The only thing that doesn't make sense, though, is no, Doctor Strange has, in fact, fought Amora before in the Defenders. Remember, Billy, there was this whole Defenders storyline of the Enchantress wanting to find love. So she actually captured the anthropomorphic representation of love itself and embodied love in a physical body. And then... you know, the Defenders got involved, and because at the time Amora had a monopoly over the mind of Barbara Norris, you know, the Valkyrie, and the Valkyrie wanted revenge on Amora for what she had done to her in the past. Basically, it was Amora who caused the Valkyrie to be, you know, imprisoned on this mortal coil way back when. But the point is, the Doc has faced Amora, you know, he in combat even as a Defender. And And this issue is presented as if they've never met, you know. But the Doc does recognize who she is once she mentions she's Amora, because that's her alter ego that she uses as a human, Amora Incantara, this Italian beauty that shows up. And Billy, much is made about her power, the kiss that she can give to mortals that allows her to control them for 7 days, this mystical kiss. So she also wants to kill the Doc, you know, as part of the Axe of Vengeance pledge that the villains have made. But before she does that, she wants to absorb his magics, which is apparently a power she has now. She, with repeated kisses from her, you know, her magical lips, she can absorb magical energy. So Rintra's worried that the Doc seems to be under her sway. he contacts Clea to ask Clea for help in the midst of a battle with the Mindless Ones. Clea's like floating above this battlescape, talking to Rentra like she's on a cell phone, saying, "I'm sure Steven can handle it." And you know, then we get the Doc meeting for his rendezvous with Amora. You know, we're thinking at this point in time he's looking for some hanky panky, right? Because he seems to be.
He's
completely under his sway. The Doc shows up. She starts to kiss him, and she comments to the executioner, "Strange, my kisses aren't absorbing any magic from this guy. Just a paltry bit of mystical energy, and he's collapsed. Why would he collapse so soon?" And then what happens, Billy? What does it turn out to be?
Yeah, she sees it was Rentra in disguise, and she's like, "Oh."
Yeah, Rentra, the good apprentice that he is, worried about the Doc's welfare. He showed up before the Doc could for the rendezvous with Amora, and then disguised himself with an illusion that apparently fooled the Enchantress, Billy. This illusion. But, you know, Rentra's got some pretty, you know, a good magics of his own. Still, she absorbed his magical strength, which caused him to collapse. Then he reverted to his Minotaur form, and then she's disgusted. She's like, "What? I kissed this creature repetitively?" Yeah. And the Doc then shows up. He was onto her the whole time, right, Billy? He shows up in his full Sorcerer Supreme majesty, his full regalia. And then we've got a massive mystical battle. But the Doc sort of, you know, he's losing because he's got the mystical bolts of and magics of Amora to deal with. And then he's got the physical attacks fueled by magic and Asgardian power from the executioner at his back. So he's put at dire straits here. So this is believable for me. You know what I mean, Billy? That this battle could go a little bit south for the Doc because he's having to fight two gods, basically, from both fronts.
Mm-hmm.
And he still manages to give a very good accounting of himself. I mean, at one point in time, he hurls the executioner from the roof with a mystical bolt. He blasts, you know, Amora with a bolt of bedevilment, and his shields of the seraphim seem to be more than enough to, you know, to block them. But then, you know, the executioner's axe eventually sort of batter through his shields, right? And Amora, she hits him with a cheap shot in the back, right? And then he's in trouble. But what happens then, Billy? I mean, you mentioned this in your synopsis, but someone shows up to save the day. And
Clear.
Yeah. Great. Now, Billy, there's a panel, a one-page splash where Jackson Geist draws Clea. It's supposed to be an amazing reveal that she's come to save the Doc, even though she's dealing with this massive Mindless One war in the Dark Dimension. She shows up on this one panel splash, but it doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. It's just not, I mean, is this our Clea? No, this is, I mean, she just, I don't know. What do you think, Doc?
Yeah, it just doesn't, I mean, I think this is, you know, early on in this artist's career, so you know, because if you look at stuff he's doing right now, it looks way better than this. So I just chalk it up to, like, you know, hey, it was, you know, early on and didn't really have his own style down, and he was penciling and inking his own stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe if he would have threw in Go Sinnott or somebody like that, it would look like $1 million. But, you know, it's not.
Yeah, I'm not going to go too hard on the artist. I'm just saying that this is not my type of art. This was already in the time that Marvel went into this overblown panel kind of, you know, penciling where I don't know, Billy, it's like, was it the coloring? Was it the inking? Yeah, the art's not that bad actually, but you know, the whole effect once you get the final product just wasn't good for me. And the colors also look a little bit muted for me. I don't know, like it doesn't look as nuanced as the colors I'm used to. But, you know, I'm no art expert, no art critic. We know what we like, and I just don't really like this art, right? And then, a few little nitpicks that I have with the art here. For instance, the women are all drawn as these type of super tall, kind of like Cindy Crawford-esque, Claudia Schiffer-esque figures, you know, models who were famous at that time. We all had their posters on our walls. So,
right, yeah.
You know, Billy, but I do like the fact that these women are obviously drawn beautifully. It's just like, how many more beautiful women will show up? You know, that's like, it's like, it's kind of when Marvel went into that whole thing of, okay, we're going to go, you know, into the 90s firmly with all these, you know, beautiful women because it sells comics. It used to always sell comics before too, but they really pushed this at the time because prices were hiked.
They did.
You know, sales were slumping. They needed to find other ways to get folks to buy it. I mean, even over in Britain, you know, at this time you had 2000 AD at this time in the early 90s, you know, doing lurid covers of these hot babes just to get people to pick up the monthly progs. I mean, this was happening everywhere, not just in the States. You know, comic books were slumping because, you know, prices were going up and it wasn't a feasible business anymore in terms of a profitable business. So, of course, this is part of it. But I'm not saying this is this artist's fault. You know, he's probably, they picked him for this style that he had. But I do like the magical battle where Clea basically, you know, completely overpowers the Enchantress. She's even got this Ditko-esque effect once she, you know, employs her full raw power, I believe, where this Ditko-like Dark Dimension mouth appears above her, you know, which is like this fanged mouth. She appears as the uvula of this mouth. And then she, like, takes the Enchantress out. It's a great fight. So it ends with them beating, you know, Clea showing up, saving the day. And this is not the first time she's going to do that. But she's just as powerful as Steven is now because she's since assumed the powers of Umar and Dormammu as Queen of the Dark Dimension, right? She wears the dark crown.
Yep.
Yeah, so it ends great with a kiss, right, Billy, between the Doc and Clea. And then we also get a preview of the next villain that's going to show up. So, Billy, overall, better than the first issue we discussed, what would you say? A little better.
Yeah, a little bit better. Not a whole lot, but a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the fight was a little bit, you know, one-sided for a while there. I was thinking, couldn't Steven give a better accounting of himself? But then, you know, I had to keep reminding myself, these two are basically Asgardian gods, you know? But I would have also liked it if Steven could have, I don't know, you know, it's hard to say. You know, they were fighting in the rain. I mean, Amora even said she called up the rain to keep other mortals from disturbing her on the top of the skyscraper they were on for the rendezvous, right, Billy? So there was this rainstorm.
Funny scene.
Yeah, it's a funny scene. This guy's hitting on her. And she's saying, oh.
Yeah, executioner to chop his head off.
Yeah, the executioner was going to decapitate that dude. Now, Billy, the next issue I'm going to give the synopsis for, we're running a little bit late. We said we'd be an hour, so let's quickly rush through this one. This one's not a great issue either. It's basically Doctor Strange versus an old Avengers villain, Archon the Magnificent, the Empyrean of Polemicus, which is this other dimensional Conan-esque magical world. He recently appeared in Weird World, you know, by Mike Del Mundo, which was a great series, miniseries.
Okay.
But, you know, the point is Archon is this villain who's a mix between the thunder god Zeus and Conan. You know, he's an amalgamation of them, I would say. And he's showing up upset. He's in our dimension, brought here by, you know, his own, you know, hatred for American cinema because they've since made movies out of him. And it's already on Archon 5. So, yeah, somehow, you know, his appearances in our world has led to Hollywood making, you know, using him as a character and making movies. And he does not like that. He's very upset. So he shows up and tries to smash up the cinema, right? And then the Enchantress appears and she says, oh, Archon, you got to do something for me, man. I failed to enact my act of vengeance on the Sorcerer Supreme. So you're gonna have to do it for me. I'm sending you to slay the Doctor. And the leverage she uses, Billy, is the fact that, you know, Archon transports himself from our dimension to his home dimension via these mystical bolts, which resemble the thunderbolts of Zeus, which he carries in this quiver on his back, right? So he's got the red bolts of destruction, and then he's got the golden bolts of teleportation. Now, she's magically removed all of his golden bolts of teleportation, forcing him to fight the Doctor Strange and kill Doctor Strange. Otherwise, he's never going to go home again, right? So then they, you know, cut to Steven in his Sanctum Sanctorum. Clea's still lounging around in this 19th century frilly nightdress. right, Billy? I prefer her in her old costume, but, you know, whatever. And they're talking and, you know, reaffirming their love. And she's saying she'll always show up if he needs her. And then you've got this bizarre sequence where, you know, Morgana Blessing shows up with a puppy as a you know, to make peace with Steven. I mean, they already made up in previous issues, but she shows up with a puppy to sort of... What was she trying to do there, Billy? I mean, where has it ever been said? I mean, not that the doc isn't a dog lover, but this is weird, man. And Sonia Green's all into it, right? Sonia Wolf, she's you're hugging the puppy, and they're saying, "Hey, you know, like, oh." And then she hands Steven a copy of her book, which he despises.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Billy, we've got this scene where Sarah Wolf, oh, sorry, I called her Sonia Wolf earlier. I was thinking Red Sonia. That's bad. And they draw her terribly. I mean, they draw her with red skin, right, Billy, which is horrible. I mean, Native American people do not have red skin. Just stop with this. You know, we've already discussed that in previous episodes. But she goes to visit Baron Mordo down in the basement where the doc has imprisoned him. Since issue 8, I think, of the Sorcerer Supreme. And then they have this moment between them where he sort of grabs her wrist and, you know, there's something between them, right, Billy? But we know, in fact, that later Sarah Wolf would become the lover of Victor Strange, Baron Blood, the Doc's brother. But yeah, something between between Sarah and Baron Mordo here, which will, you know, he even says, "Call me Carl." So weird. And then, you know, they're attacked by Archon in the Sanctum Sanctorum. Apparently the magical wards that the Doc has around the place cannot resist one of his extra dimensional red bolts of destruction, right? He just blasts open this hole in the Sanctum. And then they commence to fight outside because he in fact kidnaps Clea. Billy, why does he kidnap Clea before killing the Doc?
He has the hots for her. It's like, oh boy. I don't know.
I mean, okay, it's kind of true, you know, at various points in time, Archon from, you know, from Polemicus, he's had this trouble. He cannot find a queen, you know, so to carry on his royal bloodline, you know, so he has in the past tried to, you know, the Enchantress has in fact encountered him in the past. They know each other. The Enchantress once used him as her tool to kill the Avengers in the 60s or in the early 70s, late 60s, right, Billy? I think it was Avengers number 84 or something, where he teamed up with the Enchantress and then they ended up, he wanted to marry the Scarlet Witch. He at one point in time wanted to marry Storm, you know, from the X-Men. He's got this problem with the ladies. He needs a lady. But, I mean, his approach is definitely reprehensible. He decides to kidnap them and force them into marriage. And he was even willing to marry Clea when he was thinking she was this troglodytic, other-dimensional monster, as his minions had reported to him. So he was not aware that she was this looker, you know, but he was still going to marry her. That's what he told Enchantress before he attacked Doctor Strange. He said, oh, if he marries Clea, he'll have this extra planar link to another kingdom from another dimension, strengthening his own dimension of Polemicus. It's ridiculous, but it's fun, right, Billy? It's kind of fun. It's just stupid fun, almost more stupid than the Bronze Age stuff that you and I love, you know, but... So he takes out the Doc with the magical red bolt of destruction, but the Doc partially protects himself with a shield, and then he flies off with Clea because he's got this little dragon... who doesn't have any wings, but it seems to be able to fly. And he kidnapped Clea, and the Doc follows Clea based on these twin rings that they wear, right, Billy, which links them together across dimensions even. He tracks down Clea to this power plant, the Edison power plant. Now, I'm not sure if this power plant, this must be a nuclear power plant at this point in time. But still weird to call it the Edison, you know, but still, you know, okay, Edison, you know, electricity, whatever. So nuclear power is used to, you know, wake up electricity. It's just strange, you know. I would rather have called it something else, like the Oppenheimer. I don't know. Anyway, they probably didn't want to do controversial things. So, you know, the Doc confronts Archon, and then Archon has a bit of a, He's a bit of a devious guy, right, Billy? He's loaded up the power plant's generators with his mystical thunderbolt, saying that if the Doc, you know, engages him in magical battle, the power plant will detonate. And it's going to detonate in any case unless the Doc agrees to fight Archon man-to-man, hand-to-hand. Now, right. The Doc doesn't have much choice here, right, Billy? So he agrees. But this is insane because Archon is arguably a Wonder Man-level foe, Colossus-level foe. He's fought both of those guys. Yeah. I mean, wasn't there an issue of West Coast Avengers where Archon showed up and he fought Wonder Man to a standstill, right? And this was the more powerful Wonder Man who had since become even more ionically empowered, you know, of West Coast Avengers. Because, you know, as we remember, Wonder Man from Avengers proper was already very powerful, right, Billy? And then he became even more powerful later during the West Coast Avengers run. I mean, up to the level of Thor and the Hulk. So Archon had fought him before. Now it's the Doc versus Archon? Wow. And, you know, predictably, Archon, you know, mops the floor with the Doc. But, you know, Steven gets in some good licks with his martial arts, right, Billy? But eventually...
Yeah, he does.
I mean, I'd say he gives a good accounting of himself. It's just that Archon succeeds in pummeling him to death. And then Amora the Enchantress shows up and Archon leaves. And the Enchantress says, you know, well done. But then Steven appears. He ghostly, you know, floats through the top of the power plant roof. And then the Enchantress who's talking to Archon is in fact Clea, who's since, you know, cast an illusion disguising herself. So they've pulled a fast one on Archon where Steven wasn't dead. Clea just sort of muted his heartbeat with her magics, right? Making him seem dead, right, Billy? But, you know, he still took a bad pounding from a guy who can crush steel into pretzels. Yeah. I don't understand. But still, then Clea mystically blasts Archon off the roof. And the Enchantress, the real Enchantress who's been hanging around, she hightails it out of there, right? Teleports away. She's realized she doesn't want a round two with Clea at all. Right, Billy?
Nope. And she wants no part of it.
No way. Archon doesn't want to give up the fight, though, so Clea grants his wish. She says, you want to go back to your home dimension so bad? You can't because the Enchantress took all your teleportation bolts? Hey, let me help you out with that, Archon. And she just whisks him away with a spell. And Archon, before he goes, he says, vanquished, then aided by a female? That shows you what a...
He's
a misogynist, he is, right? Damn, this guy's, you know, reprehensible. So but he says he will return to battle her, and Clea just ends with this great line, anytime. Kind of makes me think
she's,
of...
what I really like. That's, to me, the biggest thing to like about these couple issues here, for sure, is Clea is really shown to be a really, really good, strong female character. Yeah. So that's obviously a positive.
Yeah, she was like that in the Bronze Age too, but here they're really, I mean, pushing her role as the queen of the Dark Dimension. Yeah, Billy, you're right. And she turns up to save Doctor Strange twice in the last two issues. So, and the Doc, they even comment on that at the end. She says, how do you feel about that, Steven? And Steven, you know, says, no, you know, he's long ago accepted that she's his equal. So that's a good moment between the two of them. And then they float away. And then, you know, the issue ends on a high note with them, you know, hugging and vowing to cure his brother, Victor, you know, of vampirism. So, you know, this issue was my favorite, I think, in terms of a Clea moment. But in terms of the battle, I prefer the battle in issue 12, right, Billy, between the Doc and the Enchantress and the Executioner, then Clea showing up. But this one's not bad because the Doc goes, you know, He shows a bit of his fisticuffs, you know, which is he's known for, right, Billy? I mean, he's a martial artist of some renown. I mean, even martial artists like Mantis has complimented the Doc in the past on his martial arts skill. You know, so it's something we don't see very often, but when we do see it, you can see that the Doc's a mean contender on the, you know, on the level of personal combat, right? So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but, you know, interesting. Still, you know, the crossover as a whole, listeners, we're, Billy and I, we're not very enthused about that, right, Doc?
Yeah, it's like I said, I was paging through the omnibus I have before we started recording, and I was like, wow, there are some decent issues with the artwork, because you have, you know, the likes of John Byrne and Ron Frenz and Joe Sinnott, and I think Ron Lim, but overall, it just really it was something that missed the mark. Like, this isn't one of those crossovers that's, you know, unforgettable.
I know what you mean. But still, it was fun reading it and talking about it with you, Doc, as ever. Even though we don't like this era of Doctor Strange, it's worth getting into this. And also doing a crossover with podcasts we love and love to listen to. So listeners, we implore you to do so too. Go to all those podcasts that I mentioned. I will be including them in the show notes as well, so that you can easily find them on your favorite podcatcher, and then you can listen to the rest of Acts of Vengeance, if you're so inclined. And that's it for this week's bonus episode of Into the Weird, or maybe this year's bonus episode of Into the Weird. We don't know, Billy, when we'll be back with another bonus episode. But we might do one, in the near future, including a movie. Who knows?
That's true.
So, Doc, where can people find you online?
Definitely look for me on Twitter. It's at @BillyD_licious. And then, of course, you know, the show at Into Weird. That's always where you and I are running around.
That's right. And I'm at Dark Longbox. Also check out the Long Box of Darkness, a horror comic podcast that I do with my friend Misty. We're on a hiatus at the moment, but slated to come back in April. And then you can find us on Twitter at Into Weird. That's where we are, right, Billy? And send any feedback to syncintotheweird@gmail.com. Also, check out our website, www.syncintotheweird.com, where I'll be posting a podcast addendum post with images from these three Acts of Vengeance, Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme issues we discussed. So with that, Billy, we're out of here. We'll leave the listeners with a bit of a message. Stay weird. If someone crosses you, don't get all vengeful. Don't perpetrate acts of vengeance against them. Don't ask your worst enemies to fight, you know, other people's worst enemies. Just live and let live. Be weird. Live and let live. You know, and let everybody, you know, do them. Do you. Whatever I want to say here, Billy. I'm just saying, be cool. Stay frosty and stay nice to each other, right? And with that, it's the end of another Into the Weird. But we'll be back, Billy, soon with another episode featuring one of our favorite Marvel duos, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, so we'll leave it at that, but look for that to drop within a week's time after this bonus episode. And with that, we're out of here, right, Billy? So that's it from me. Bye bye.
Stay with me. Get ready for the big payback.